Risky Business, your weekly security briefing with Patrick Gray, sponsored by CyberTrust.
Hello and welcome to the second instalment of itradio.com.au's security podcast, Risky Business, for Tuesday the 27th of February 2007. We've got another great show for you today. This week's feature interview is a chat with Mark Mayfrey, the so-called Chief Hacking Officer of EI Digital Security in the United States. EI is well known for finding Windows glitches, and with reports emerging about the company's discovery of an Office 2007 bug that's exploitable on Microsoft's new Vista platform, we thought we'd get Mark's views on the security of the operating system in general. We'll also be checking in with Auscert's operations manager Carl Hanmore, who's had a busy week or so dealing with the aftermath of the so-called John Howard Trojan. And of course, we'll be in touch with our sponsor CyberTrust for a chat about the latest bugs found in the Snort intrusion detection system. But first, it's time for the headlines with ZDNet Australia's resident security expert and blogger, Munir Kataria. So Munir, let's start off by talking about this so-called John Howard Trojan that came by last week. What was the go?
Oh, that was an interesting bit of social engineering there. I mean, seeing so many people, I think initial reports said about 750 Australian banking customers were affected by it.
Yeah.
It's just a really, really smart way to go about it. You know, send an email saying John Howard's got a heart attack, he's critically ill, and everyone clicked on the email, and the next thing you know, it downloaded a Trojan.
Well, I guess love him or hate him, it's the sort of thing that would make you click on it, wouldn't it?
Well, this is it. I mean, my news editor was talking about this, and he was saying, you know, what can you do to try and avoid this? But the fact is that you can't just say, you know, you can only click on work-related emails. So it's not really a surprise that so many people got done by it.
Yeah, no, I suppose not. Now, I suppose moving on, we've had another bumper week for vulnerabilities with all sorts of reports in everything from the Snort intrusion detection system. We got Google desktop search, Cisco IP phones, Mozilla mail and web browsers, you know, Office 2007. It's just been another absolutely bonkers week, hasn't it?
I think the past couple of weeks since you started this show, actually, it's gone pretty crazy. I think they were saving themselves. We've had all sorts of vulnerabilities. Again, the Microsoft one. I think the Google desktop one is really interesting. I mean, that's allowing, you know, a small cross-site scripting error suddenly allowed access directly into people's hard drives. And that is scary as. So I think this is a really big issue, which they're going to have to seriously look at.
Well, we always used to regard cross-site scripting flaws as being fairly trivial, didn't we? And now we see an example of one where, you know, it can quite literally be used to suck all sorts of data right off your hard drive.
Exactly, yeah. This is a big example here of something very, very small leading to a massive vulnerability, and it is something they're going to have to seriously look at. So I hope Google is working on this to try and fix it for the long term, not just, you know, put a little patch over it for now.
We've also seen a flaw found in Office 2007, which is apparently EI Digital Security, the company that found the flaw, claims it's exploitable on Vista. Now, this would be bad news for the guys at Redmond, wouldn't it? They would not be particularly happy that within a couple of weeks of their consumer version of Office 2007 coming out, it's already found to be vulnerable.
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, all new products, they're vulnerable like that. You expect something to come out. But again, Office has been in beta for so long. There's millions of people that have tested it. Microsoft's been going on about how, you know, they're testing all their code using these scanners to try and avoid these kind of errors. But it just shows, you know, no matter how much testing they put on, they're still come out with a vulnerability. And not only is a vulnerability, it's highly critical, which means that from Microsoft's definition, that means that you don't need any user action or very little user interaction to spread a worm. Yeah, very, very dangerous.
Okay, Munir, thanks a lot for talking to us again.
Thanks a lot, Patrick.
Each week, we're joined by Auscert's operations manager, Carl Hanmore, to discuss the week in review, and he's on the line now. Now, Carl, I understand you opened registrations for the annual Auscert conference today.
That is right. The registrations for Auscert 2007 are now open. They can be accessed via conference.auscert.org.au, and we're expecting the Mad Keen people to be up there applying, getting their registrations in, because we do end up having to cap numbers on the event. So occasionally we have had to turn people away at the door.
Is the speaker list finalised yet?
The speaker list is about to be finalised for the conference. I'd expect to see that up any time over the next 2 to 3 days. That should be up there then.
Now, Carl, obviously the John Howard Trojan would have kept you very busy last week.
That kept us absolutely flat out last week, Patrick. I had three of my guys sitting taking calls at 5:30 in the afternoon on the back of that Trojan outbreak, using some old vulnerabilities in that Trojan to get it delivered, a pretty reasonable hook despite all its spelling mistakes.
Okay, and I think you estimated infection numbers at around 1,000?
That's probably about right. Of course, these things are always a bit hard to track down, so I think more information will come to to light over the next few weeks as people do some post-incident analysis. There also may well have been a couple of variants in here, perhaps some copycats about it. And we're also aware that people have been clicking on the links. So do not click on the links in these emails.
Naughty user.
That's right, naughty user, and there's way too many of them.
Now, in other news, there were more vulnerabilities reported. We had everything from Mozilla mail agents through web browsers, Office 2007, Google desktop search, Cisco IP phones, and I suppose this is one of the more interesting ones to folks like you and me, which is the flaw in Snort, in the Snort intrusion detection system. It's always a bit of a shame when your security software becomes a liability in its own right, isn't it?
That's right. Look, this is in the pre-processor parts of Snort, still things that people could be using. It will possibly impact people using, obviously, the appliances based on Snort as well. So it's something that it's certainly in the home IT stable where you've got a really tech-savvy user who likes to run their own toys, they'll be wanting to fix this pretty sharpish. And obviously in the corporate environment where people are using Snort or products based on Snort, they'll want to get the patches from their vendor as soon as possible because it's a network-based attack.
Now, I note with interest that it was Internet Security Systems that uncovered this vulnerability and reported it to SourceFire. This isn't the first time they've found holes in Snort, and usually what we see is a couple of weeks later a vulnerability in one of ISS's products disclosed by SourceFire. Do you reckon this will happen again? They'll go tit for tat?
If companies are finding vulnerabilities in each other's products, providing they're sharing them with each other responsibly, then, you know, as mere users in this field, UI and your listeners benefit from them actually sharing that, and what their drivers are under the covers, who really minds, as long as they're doing it responsibly and helping each other out effectively in the long run.
Carl, thank you very much. Oh, is there anything we should be keeping an eye on for this week?
Look, this week I expect we'll be talking a bit more about some vulnerabilities in the Mozilla suite, so keep your eyes posted for those.
Carl, thanks a lot for taking time out to speak to Risky Business.
No problems at all, Patrick.
Well, now that we've chatted to Carl, it's time for our weekly feature interview. Mark Mayfrey, EI Digital Security's self-styled Chief Hacking Officer, has been an authority on Windows security bugs for years. An outspoken critic of Microsoft, Mark's technical prowess is legendary. In this interview, Mark tells us what he thinks of Microsoft's new operating system, Vista. Is it just an updated version of XP with a more annoying security interface?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's exactly how it seems, is, you know, a version of XP that's gone through a much more thorough code audit and whatnot. I mean, I think some of the stuff of what they did on the interface with constantly prompting people anytime you want to do anything that might be security related, having to say yes again, yes again. I think that's bad in a sense because that's not really real security, and eventually people just start clicking yes for everything.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because I was just on the line with some of the product development guys from Microsoft earlier this morning, and, you know, I asked them about that. I said, you know, don't you get that, you know, I mean, my mum doesn't know what an ActiveX control is, but, you know, still I'm getting these pop-ups coming at me relentlessly, and it, doesn't it just sort of become a bit of a habit saying, yes, yes, okay, just make it work?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's exactly so. I mean, for home users especially and people that aren't as computer literate, I mean, they just get, you know, used to either say yes for everything or no for everything, and you really have the two outcomes of you're eventually going to let bad things happen or you're going to not let the good things happen, and then you're turning into a support problem and that sort of thing. So that in that kind of case, I mean, you do want to prompt and ask users, you know, are they doing the right things, but I think a lot of people get carried away and start to think that that actually brings some level of security, and it's definitely not any sort of level of security in that respect.
Well, I suppose what it's doing is putting the decision of particular actions that are security related into the hands of the user, but if the user doesn't necessarily understand the dialogue and if they can't interpret it, it doesn't really get us anywhere, does it?
Yeah, and I think it's also shifting the blame, right? Because the blame of the computing experience right now is that, you know, well, hey, we warned you three times and then you were compromised, but, you know, you had to say yes three times so they can say it's, you know, your fault for doing so. But reality is that, you know, my mom doesn't know any better, so it doesn't matter how many times she clicks yes and eventually something bad happens. You know, it's really not her fault, the software. Should just inherently not have these problems and should function properly.
Apple users are really taught to drag, you know, applications to the applications folder and authenticate and really set everything up before they run stuff. Whereas that's not a habit that Windows users are sort of encouraged to get into. Were you surprised that Microsoft didn't really change its model for installing applications and executing code arbitrarily?
No, I mean, I think as far as, you know, how users are interacting with applications, I mean, that's hard to shift. It's really like a kind of cultural shift. And I think there's enough things that they did like with the constant pop-ups and, you know, not having privileges to do things, I think that's going to be enough of a shock to most people. You know, and the reality is that, you know, stuff like, for example, like privilege separation, I mean, it's existed in the Unix world forever. Apple actually, you know, obviously took advantage of being on the Unix platform and actually doing it in a much more nice visual way, which made it more usable. Yeah, and if you look at Microsoft's implementation, which is, you know, a bad knockoff of Apple's, which is, you know, a visual knockoff of what Unix has done forever, you know, I mean, they definitely didn't even get it right in comparison to Apple's, you know, OS X as far as, you know, privileges and that sort of thing.
Well, it's not particularly gorgeous, but it, you know, it does seem like a more solid OS than XP. I mean, just using it,
yeah.
it feels more high quality. Has that been your experience as well?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you can, you know, you can always pick on all the little, they need to keep improving this and doing that. But I mean, definitely Vista is, as a, from a security perspective, has a lot of improvements over Windows XP.
So it wasn't necessarily the step sideways that many people in the InfoSec field were anticipating.
No, I mean it's improvements and stuff. I don't think it's some, you know, huge leap forward or anything like that. I mean, I think again, you look at like what they're doing with one of the main security improvements of Vista is the address space randomization and things of that nature. And it's really stuff that's been happening in the Linux and open source Unix world forever now. And, you know, so it's really funny to me when I see these, you know, Microsoft guys, they get on stage at conferences and they're bragging about all the new security features like they've invented something new, when in reality they're just catching up to really what the rest of the world's been doing for over 10 years now. And they finally have realized that, wow, we should actually do all these things everybody else has been doing because, you know, we are getting pummeled over the head on security and that sort of thing.
Well, this is one of the things too with Vista, isn't it? That I suppose even if there are vulnerabilities in applications that are deployed on Vista, exploiting them is actually going to turn out to be quite tricky. I mean, a lot of those old techniques just won't work because you're all of a sudden having to guess offsets in your exploit
yeah.
code. You know, I mean, you're screwed unless you know where stuff is in memory.
It definitely depends. I mean, stuff like the randomization that really, a lot of people keep equating that to something where buffer overflows in general are all, you know, extinct or whatever. And that's not true for a few reasons. Number one, there's different types of memory related vulnerabilities. There's also, if you look at any of the statistics, there's so many vulnerabilities that usually have nothing to do, if you look at the Internet Explorer vulnerabilities, that have nothing to do with buffer overflows in general. So there's still lots of classes of attacks that exist and are totally not affected by anything that they've done in Vista. And the other thing to think about is all the other applications. One of the things, you know, I've been preaching pretty much since the beginning of last year, through 2006 into 2007, is to make sure people understand it's more than the Microsoft world and that you have so much other software that's running on top of your Vista and XP and everything else. And most of the time you're not taking the right security precautions on updates and scanning and that sort of thing for those other software. So, for example, I was in Germany recently and I took a brand new Vista system and did a live demonstration of remotely executing code on it through, you know, basically user clicks on the wrong URL. And I was found through two of our researchers here, Derek and Daniel Soder, and that was using a non-Microsoft vulnerability that existed within Java. And obviously in that case, again, even if Microsoft themselves were perfect, if anybody's using Java, which I think there's a couple of people out there, then your Vista system's completely compromised.
So you don't think we've entered this new golden age of a much more secure OS? You think it's just changing
no.
the game a bit?
Yeah, it definitely changes the game. And it raises the bar, but really, Windows XP Service Pack 2, that was another area where they raised the bar.
Well, that was a much more significant yeah. raising of the bar than, I suppose, the difference between XP Service Pack 2 and Vista, wasn't it? That was almost a quantum leap in terms of the home user's security.
I definitely think that, yeah, XP Service Pack 2 was a much larger leap with everything that they did with the Security Center and firewalling and really improvements around all of that. And with the number of vulnerabilities that are discovered that, you know, didn't work on XP Service Pack 2 because they found them during code auditing and stuff like that. Again, not to minimize the level of improvements that Microsoft has done in Vista, but, you know, here we are basically a few weeks or, you know, month or whatever it is now after Vista's been released to the retail. And there's already been five or six different Vista-specific, you know, vulnerabilities that affect Vista. Last Microsoft patch Tuesday, there was a remote vulnerability that was patched by Microsoft that affects Vista just as nasty as any XP bug. So, you know, it's interesting to me as everybody keeps having a debate about, you know, Vista and, you know, whether it is, you know, some, great leap forward, but the vulnerability is already there, and we're very much at the beginning right now. People have only really started to look at Vista from a research and security perspective, from a vulnerability discovery perspective, but we already have a handful of vulnerabilities that have been found. So
now, Mark, you have been a long-time critic of Microsoft in the area of security. Would you say, though, that they've done a fairly good job with Vista? Are you prepared to make that call?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think Microsoft overall, the thing that I always find interesting is it's easy for me to comment on, you know, I think they need to improve this and do that. But at the end of the day, there's no other software company that does more to secure their code than Microsoft. And I think what you're going to see with Vista is that literally, even if you do, as a software company, even if you do everything close to perfect, but Microsoft really is doing about almost everything that they can as a software company to secure their code, but they're still going to have problems. And it's weird to me is that a lot of people think that there should be this thing that we reach at some point where the operating system is impenetrable and that there are no bugs anymore. And that point to me, you know, I don't think that is ever going to happen. So I don't think we can really judge Microsoft based on, you know, hey, there's already been some Vista vulnerabilities or they have some problems and stuff. I think you got to look at what they're doing to improve their code. And as a company, organizationally, they're doing almost everything that you could possibly do to make your software secure. And what we're going to see throughout 2007 is that we have one of the largest or the largest software company in the world that is doing everything they can do to secure their software. And there's still going to be vulnerabilities because vulnerabilities stem from humans that are writing code that make mistakes and you're not going to catch it all. So I think people need to kind of make that realization at some point and really step back and say, you know what? We do need to applaud Microsoft because they are doing everything that a software company could possibly do. And there's still going to be mistakes and that's okay.
Mark Mayfrey, thank you very much for your time.
Cool. Thank you for yourself.
EI Digital Security's Mark Mayfrey. Risky business wouldn't exist if it weren't for the support of our sponsor, Cybertrust. So each week, we like to give Cybertrust consultants a chance to share their views on something that's happened over the last week. Today, we're talking to Cybertrust's principal consultant, Andrew Walls, about the flaws that were found in the open source intrusion detection system, Snort. So, Andrew, you saw the news of the vulnerabilities that have been found in the Snort intrusion detection system. It's always a bit of a pain, isn't it, when the security software that's supposed to be protecting you actually becomes a liability itself?
In actuality, it's just sort of a normal part of life with computers. Any system that's built on computers intrinsically is going to have flaws in it that come to light from time to time. So it's just a normal part of how you manage the systems. What's different about security devices in particular is that you configure your networks and you configure your deployment of security devices such that vulnerabilities like this have a minimal impact on the actual security environment that you're sustaining.
Yeah, look, I suppose with an intrusion detection system, you can use something like a network tap or a one-way sort of connection to that machine. So even if it runs into a bit of trouble, it's not like anyone's getting behind your firewall. But there is a higher expectation set by the market for the security of code that goes into security devices, though, isn't there? And do you think that's an unrealistic expectation?
Well, it is unrealistic to think that any system is ever going to be perfect because the nature of code is such that there are things that we're putting into code today that seem perfectly normal, that may turn out to be a vulnerability at some point in the future. We can't predict how somebody might be able to misuse what is a normally accepted part of coding process. But what we can expect is that in the recommendations for deployment, these sorts of risks are highlighted so that people can configure their systems and configure the other overlapping controls so that there's minimal impact. Now, in the specific reference to this stuff that came out about Snort, in actuality, the buffer overflows and the heap stack overflow that was discussed in the two different vulnerabilities could actually be exploited without actually targeting the Snort devices themselves. The Snort devices, like you're saying, they operate what we would consider a passive tap, if you will, on your network and are just monitoring traffic flying by without them having to have the traffic directed to them. So they're just sitting there feeding on everything that goes past.
And I suppose if you throw the wrong thing past it, sniff, sniff, overflow, overflow, and it's
exactly.
All over, isn't it?
Overflow, right. Yeah. At the same time, however, the this vulnerability is already fixed in the most recent production release of the code. If you were to exploit this, however, and you crashed an IDS sensor, that would be sending off all sorts of alarms and whistles in any security organization, especially if you saw multiple IDS sensors going down. So this would not be a quiet attack. And the attack itself, in terms of exploiting these vulnerabilities, doesn't buy you anything. All it does is crashes the IDS, which would then automatically reboot.
Yeah, but crashing an IDS is handy when you want to, you know, be a little bit noisy.
If you try to sneak another exploit in, exactly. It sort of clears the path so that you can then fire something in. But you're going to have a very narrow window of opportunity there. So this is not a simple thing to exploit.
So this vulnerability isn't really such a big deal. It's not. We shouldn't be hitting panic stations just yet.
When we look closely at the actual vulnerability, we pretty much shrugged our shoulders and said, well, upgrade if you think you need to and monitor in the meantime. In and of itself, exercising the vulnerability, i.e. exploiting it, isn't going to get a hacker anything except a crash sensor, which will then reboot and go back online. So, is it something that really exposes an organization to a lot of risk? Nah. Does it expose you to a little bit of risk? Yes. Is it a hassle? Yes. Should you fix it? Yes. But it's not something that you should be staying up late worrying about. And again, as you were pointing out at the beginning of things, most security tools like this, be they firewalls, IDS, IPS, whatever, are designed from the beginning to be invisible. You want these controls to just lurk in the background where people cannot directly target them, can't see that they're there, they just see a gap, and they don't know what's in that gap. They can't tell whether you've got Snort or whether you've got somebody else's appliance or whether you've got some homegrown thing, who knows. They shouldn't be able to tell.
So there's already going to be a fair bit of guesswork in there in the first place to see
who's
running Snort.
Exactly, which means you'd have to do sort of a shotgun approach to trying to exercise this vulnerability. You have to sort of either have other information that tells you that the person you're targeting or company you're targeting runs Snort, which you might be able to obtain through other mechanisms like seeing their personnel at a Snort training session. But basically, you'd have to have some other information. Or you basically just send this exploit to every company you can think of and hope that it gets you something. But at the end of the day, unless you're launching another exploit right behind it, all you're going to do is crash somebody's sensor. You're not going to actually gain any advantage over the organization.
Turns out it's fairly useless. Well, Andrew Walls, thank you very much for taking some time out.
My pleasure.
Well, that's it for another edition of Risky Business, brought to you by CyberTrust. You can catch us every Tuesday on itradio.com.au or subscribe via the links on our website. Special thanks to all of our guests and, of course, our sponsor CyberTrust and our hosting partner, Vigabyte. See you all next week.